Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am very excited to introduce you to today's guest, who is about to give you some amazing news that is relevant today. We have with us author Rebecca Jane Weinstein, who has a very exciting book called Fat Sex, The Naked Truth. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you very much.
So what is your big news today? What's going on today?
Well, Fat Sex, The Naked Truth came out a couple of weeks ago, and it's on Amazon, and today the ebook comes out, and I'm about to start a press tour in a couple of weeks, starting with the Today Show and then Dr. Drew, and it's very exciting and overwhelming and not what I expected.
Oh, what did you expect?
Well, it was hard to know, because a book about fat people and sex is not necessarily what one thinks of as conventionally popular. Mm-hmm. And so it was a risk, and I had really no idea what kind of interest I would get, even in terms of having people to talk to about the book, people who I interviewed. I didn't know if people would be interested in talking to me, telling their stories. I didn't know what kind of stories I would get. And so it was a risk all around. And whether or not people in the general public would be interested in something like this, you know, I just hadn't the slightest idea. There's nothing else like it out there. It's really the first book about people's experiences being large and having romantic, intimate relationships.
And it seems like it resonated with a lot of people, because your Kickstarter was fabulously successful, correct?
It was really successful, and I have found that it resonates with all kinds of people that I did not anticipate. It's not just large people, not just fat people, not just women. I have a good deal of interest from men who, it turns out, have many of the same feelings that women do, which, you know, although it's not really surprising if you think about it, it's not the way we tend to perceive things in our culture. It also has resonated with people who are average size, people who are very thin, who have spent their life with feelings of inadequacy or, you know, other insecurities because they felt like they were too thin. It also resonates with people who have had eating disorders. So, you know, the truth is, although the topic is fat, when it comes to bodies, issues are universal. And so you can kind of plug in different people's particulars into the stories and say, you know, I really relate to that, even though I'm not exactly like that person.
So what I'm hearing is that the expectation in society, based on what we tend to see and hear, is that this was something that you thought maybe would only be of interest to women who personally are experiencing their lives as large people, but that the reality is everybody can understand that we get sold one particular idea of beauty, one particular idea of body is sexual, and the reality is most of us don't fit into that. But we're still all sexual beings.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, I can't say everybody relates to it, because there has been, well, whether they relate to it or not, there has been some hostility towards the book from individuals who feel like it's all just excuses, although they haven't read the book. So
their concern is with, theoretically, that this might be...
you know, it's sort of, I don't believe fat people are really fat because I don't know. I don't know what they think, but you know, that's a very small group of people who are hostile for whatever their personal reasons. And overall, you know, it's just been tremendously accepted and appreciated. And, you know, the stories, and I haven't really talked about them yet, but the stories are so moving. You know, they're sad and they're happy and they're funny and they really reflect complex emotions and experiences. And we all go through stuff in our lives. You know, it's because we are whatever we are, we may feel alienated, but that doesn't mean that we actually are alienated.
That perhaps we feel alienated, but other people are experiencing the same basic situation, even if the circumstances are a little bit different.
Yeah, even if they're just relating to the feelings. You know, people feel similar things to each other, and this is sort of bridging the gap. And in addition to that, it is sharing the stories of fat people who are sort of in the closet about their sexuality because they're not considered conventionally attractive by many people.
What do you mean when you say in the closet about their sexuality? They just don't feel free to talk about it at all, or?
Well, it's a combination of things. And there's actually been, throughout the book, particularly discussed by men, there's a interesting parallel between the fat world and the gay world. And a lot of the language is very similar. A lot of the experiences described are similar. A lot of the fears are similar. And, you know, this is what people have been telling me. So when I say in the closet, several things. First, that's a phrase that has been used in this book independently by people a number of times. You know, people who don't know each other, who haven't talked to each other, and have expressed that their sense, like, for instance, if there's a man who appreciates large women more than small women, they feel like they have to be in the closet. Or sexual relationships that women have with men, they feel like they're being put in the closet because they are having kind of secret sexual relationships, and they're not being wined and dined and showed off to family.
So it's kind of like that old joke about like comparing being into large women and being like into, what is it, something like scooters or something like that, where it's like it's really fun but you don't want your friends to see,
like, yeah, there's a lot of discussion about that, both men talking about that pressure, which is very intense. I mean, some of the descriptions by the men of their life experiences when they knew that they were attracted to large women from a young age, you know, from puberty and before, the pressure that they felt to not be attracted to large women was intense. And many men, not all of them, but many of them went against their own instinct because they were just too uncomfortable. And many men feel that there are a whole lot of men who are not only in the closet, but subverting their feelings altogether, and they're just not acting on how they truly feel. And then there was a second part to that question, which I've forgotten now.
I don't remember. Oh, about being in the closet in general. Not necessarily being attracted to larger people, but like, do larger people also feel like they have to closet their own sexuality and just like...
You know, then there are many experiences that women have shared that basically men want to have sex with me, but they don't want to take me out. Hmm. So many women describe years and years of relationships with men who won't be seen with them in public. And it's devastating. It really screws up your head in terms of your attractiveness and who you are and what you deserve and what you're, you know, in terms of respect and entitlement. And it's a strange thing. And, you know, all of that is not really surprising because we live in a culture that is very hostile towards fat people. So is it really shocking that there's a lot of pressure on men to not be with fat women? And it's true in the other direction too. There's pressure on women to not be with fat men, although it doesn't seem to be as intense, at least from peers. Although I think, unfortunately, that's changing, that it's becoming more and more difficult for men in the sense that they're expected to have a particular body size and shape and look to be considered good looking. But all of that said, although a lot of that is, you know, that's negative, that's not a good thing, and it's not a happy thing, and it's very difficult for people, it's not always the case. And one thing that I found is that people learn to overcome this as they mature, as they meet people who are not in the closet in some, you know, who aren't hiding their preference, who aren't hiding their appreciation. People are teaching each other that it's okay to like who you like, and it's okay to be who you are. And then, you know, there are people who are just somehow, and I can't really explain why, you know, it seems to have something to do with personality and individual perception, but some people are just feel that they're incredibly sexy no matter what they look like, and don't feel like they've been in the closet or they've been with men who've been in the closet, or, you know, they're out there and people love them and they get lots of attention and lots of dates and lots of sex. And, you know, so it really runs the gamut. They're all different kinds of people.
So one of the things that comes to mind for me when you're talking about how some folks have always just been fine with their size and it's not a problem for them at all, and they are free to gloriously celebrate their bodies and their sexuality, race comes to mind and the differences between how some cultures approach it and others do. Did you find that race came into play with the people that you interviewed?
You know, That's interesting, and I didn't focus explicitly on race because that was sort of a whole other area that really needed a lot of discussion on its own. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that culturally there are definitely differences, and there are differences culturally within America, of course, and different races in this country and other industrialized countries. But then there are also dramatic differences in other parts of the world, like places in Africa where it's still idealized to be as large as you possibly can be. And it seems to be that as a general principle, it has to do with economics, mm-hmm. and that when food is plentiful, you know, we're always striving, the ideal, the best person is the one who does the most difficult thing. So if you're living somewhere where food is plentiful, it's more difficult, at least this is the perception, mm-hmm. it's more difficult to be slender. If you're living in a tribe in Africa where getting fat really takes a tremendous amount of work, it means that you have money and you have resources, and it may mean that you come from all kinds of privilege, then being large is idealized. That's been true throughout history, mm-hmm. you know, not just in Africa. That's an example for today. It's not really an example throughout history. But I don't go into a tremendous amount of detail. I'm not a historian or a sociologist. I'm really a storyteller. So what I'm finding now, honestly, between this book and my other work on a website I run called peopleofsize.com, is that although there may be differences in the perception of attraction, say, in white culture and African-American culture and Hispanic culture, I think the differences are becoming more and more narrow, that the pressures are now really seeping in to every culture that has access to mainstream media. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I'm not speaking about that as an anthropologist or a sociologist or an expert, really. It's just, it seems to me that that's changing. And it's not just race. It's also changing somewhat in terms of sexual orientation. And this does come up in the book, where when I talk to lesbian women in the past, historically, there was much more acceptance of large body size in the lesbian community. There was more acceptance of a butch look and a larger body and a sense of comfort and an appreciation for, you know, a strength, a real physical presence in the world that was large. And I'm told that that seems to be changing, and that more and more, particularly younger women, look just like straight women.
I can definitely attest to that. That actually has to do a fair amount with my dissertation, which was on how people's preferences for their partner's bodies differ based on their own personal body history. That's what my study was on, and specifically on women who are attracted to women. And we're finding that as gay culture becomes more mainstream and mainstream accepts more homosexuality, we're also finding that the idea of lesbian is changing in culture. And so part of that's been really helpful for lesbians who are femme, because they've been very invisible for a long time. Like, a very, very feminine lesbian might feel like they have to just constantly be coming out over and over and over again because nobody thinks that they're gay, and so it's hard for them to get dates. But now there's just more and more representations of these, like, very long-haired, very small-bodied, like, not butch lesbians, which is great. But then the expectation now is lesbians also have to have that same mainstream body type to be attractive, whereas previously there was just sort of like a, we're not part of the mainstream culture, so we can reject lots of it. We can reject parts of the patriarchy. We can reject parts of, you know, standards of economic models and our political stuff. But in addition to that, like, there was a greater acceptance of body types, and we didn't have to necessarily fall into the same traps. But yeah, as it gets more mainstream, I definitely see what you mean in terms of the expectation now is everybody has to look like they're on the L word. So.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, all of them, you know, it's mainstream now to the point where there are lesbians on television all over the place, not just on cable, but on, you know, network TV. And they all look like, you know, whoever. I'm 45, so Jennifer Aniston, but I don't know, whoever the person in their 20s is who's the new Jennifer Aniston. What's her name with the bangs?
What's her name with the bangs? I don't know who that is. I was thinking, like, the girls on Glee, because there's, like, a lesbian couple on Glee, so.
Okay, right, okay. That's better than what's her name with the bangs.
Okay, so when you're asking people their stories, what are some of the most heartening, happy, inspiring stories that you heard?
Um, I would say the most heartening and happy stories are not individual stories, but the way people progress in their lives. That many, many people have a lot of trouble and a lot of insecurity and just not feeling comfortable in their skin and not feeling attractive and feeling that they are all of the things society is telling them they are. And then they meet somebody or they meet group of people or, you know, they come to personal realizations and they start to, as they mature, and it's not necessarily about age, it's really more about life experience, but people start to come into their own and, you know, they find somebody who loves them and all of a sudden they realize they're lovable and that they deserve to be loved and they're beautiful the way that they are. And or they get involved in size acceptance and they start realizing that they're not required to hate themselves, that just because they were told by some people, by the media, by our culture, that they're supposed to hate the way they are, it doesn't mean they have to. They don't actually have to listen to that. You know, they are entitled to their own minds and that there are a lot of other people who agree with them. So I think, you know, although there are people in the book who have had more and less trouble in their life in terms of sexual relationships and feeling attractive, I don't think anybody starts out with complete confidence. Even if, you know, whether a person, there are some people in the book who were heavy from when they were young, and there are some people who got heavier as they get older. So whenever you start being heavy, you know, you sort of think of it as your starting point in the difficult road of being a fat person in the world of sex. It all seems to be very similar, that most people have a certain amount of trouble feeling that they can assimilate, and then they progress in the world. And truly, I don't think anybody I interviewed hasn't had some, if not really outstanding revelations in their lives where they changed. They changed their sense of self. And it's really about a sense of self, because it seems that no matter who you are and what you look like and what other people think about you, the most primarily profound aspect in attracting other people is how you feel about yourself. And it sounds terribly cliche. And when I was writing the book, you know, I would come across that a lot, where I was finding myself sounding a little cliche because, you know, you need to love yourself before other people will love you kind of stuff. And the fact is, it's true. And it may be a cliche, but it's probably a cliche because it's true.
It's one of those profound things that doesn't really make sense until you're kind of going through it or on the other side of it. I think it's along just the basic process of growing up is coming to realize that, like, all the shit that we're super anxious about is optional. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly. That it really is optional. You know, there's one woman I talked to who said to me, she's really comfortable in her body and she just attracts men everywhere. She has an incredible husband and they have a wonderful relationship. And she hasn't always had the best experiences with men, but now, and I'm not sure how old she is, she's in her 30s, I guess. She says to me, I stand up straight when I walk. And people notice me and find me attractive. And it's really, it sounds almost trite, but it's really not trite at all. You know, that she walks into a room with her chest held high and she feels like she's an attractive person and she exudes that kind of energy, and people just grasp onto that because they really want, people really want to be connected. Mm-hmm. And there's so much, I mean, maybe that's why the book crosses all kinds of lines, is because people really, really want to be connected, and it's really hard. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, what you look like, how much you weigh. Making profound, intimate connections with people is work. You know, we all know that. So everybody gets it, that it's a process and that you have to learn and that you have to accept yourself. And so to me, that's the happiest thing about the book, is that really the stories, for the most part, all have happy endings. And it's not by design. I interviewed people who wanted to be interviewed. I didn't seek anybody out. I put a general call for people to be interviewed, and I interviewed almost every single person who came to me and said they wanted to be interviewed. So I had no idea who these people were. I interviewed them, whether they were men or women, gay, straight, didn't matter. And I mean, I tried to get as much of a cross section as I could, but I interviewed everybody. And
about how many people did you have?
Well, altogether, I interviewed probably about 40 people.
Okay.
I interviewed a number of couples, and so I have a number of couples in the book. There are a bunch of stories that didn't make it into the book for one reason or another, like the recording device broke, and so I couldn't go back and listen to the tape. You know, so there were some things that kept some of the stories out, but there are 20 chapters, and plus two chapters that where I talk about myself, which is another interesting aspect of this book for me. And then there's a foreword written by Margaret Cho. And so I don't know, altogether there are about 30 people in the book or so.
So I'm also curious because the title of the book is Fat Sex. So I want to know about sexy stories too. Like, do we have... Because, like, so far we've been talking about, you know, it's important stuff and it's interesting stuff. And that's, you know, it's the emotional piece that people are definitely tapping into. But, like, we gotta have some sexy stories in here. Like, I feel there's this real good opportunity for some good stuff. Anything stand out to you?
Well, you know, sex is an element in the book. And, you know, I don't want to mislead your listeners to think this is a pornographic book at all, because it's really, really not.
Okay.
However, there are very interesting stories about sex. Like, for instance, I interviewed a woman who was one of the first fat porn stars. And in the early 80s, she was an extremely successful porn actress in mainstream porn films. And she also did many other things in her life in the sex industry. She worked as a dominatrix, and she worked as a pinup girl, which is not as innocent as it sounds. And she also worked in mainstream movies where they ended up using her essentially as a porn actress in mainstream movies. So there's a whole chapter about the sort of underground world and what it's like to experience the porn industry, which is really fascinating because most of us don't have too much insight into what it's actually like to be inside the porn industry. And her experiences having sex with the male porn actors and the female porn actors, and how she was treated as a fat woman, and the incredible difference, dramatic difference between the way the other actors felt about her versus the way the public felt about her. She was absolutely adored. She was a porn star. And men would write her, and she would sometimes meet them, and she had both flings with them and also sex for money. And they loved her. They loved her body. And many of them, you know, as we were talking about in the closet before, many of them sought her out because they had this incredible desire to have sex with fat women, but were afraid to meet a fat woman at their church. So instead, they turned to porn because they could get involved with what they really wanted in private.
Is that, again, going back to that whole, like, fear of what other people are going to think situation? Like, the in the closet out of, like, you'd think if anywhere would be cool with it, it'd be a church because, like, people there want you to have, you know, real connections with real people and not be superficial. I think... maybe that's my misunderstanding because I don't really go to church. I just like assume.
I don't know. I can't speak for all churches. All I'm saying, you know, or
I just
all...
assume people aren't shallow there. I don't know. Less so than like a nightclub or something.
Well, I would assume that church is less shallow than a nightclub.
This is how much we don't know. Neither one of us were like.
I don't really know. Honestly, I really don't know. I mean, I'm no expert on churches or nightclubs. What I do know is that she said to me that in her experience, men who were afraid to have sex with fat women in public would use the porn and write her these incredibly emotional, heartfelt letters. You know, they weren't just, you know, Penthouse Forum kind of stuff. They were like, I wish I could be with somebody like you. And and she explains that she didn't really understand the power that pornography has in people's lives. And I don't mean power in a negative way. I mean, like, the important emotional outlet that pornography actually has, which is not really something I thought about. And you know, that may not be true for all people. I don't know. I guess people use porn for all kinds of reasons, but, you know, including the obvious. And the obvious was always involved, too. But it's more than that. And it was an opportunity for an experimentation and allowing people to be who they really are. Then I have a story about a woman who used the internet. She was married and then divorced and then felt very uncomfortable about her body and didn't know how to move into the dating world or the having sex world. And she started going online and chatting with men. And at first she was lying about who she was and sort of creating any kind of physical persona that she thought would attract men. And then slowly she started to open up and ask all of these men what they really liked and what they really wanted, what kind of sex they really wanted, who did they really want to have sex with, what kind of bodies were attractive, what were attractive about bodies. And she found out that there were all of these men who were really interested in flesh and having sex with someone who had lots of flesh because it's extremely feminine. And it was very erotic to experience all that flesh. And she started to meet them. And so she started to sort of date, and then she just started having sex with them, you know, pretty randomly. And she grew up sexually through using the internet, because at first it gave her the anonymity to be anybody, and then it gave her the freedom to be who she was without rejection that was too harsh, and then it gave her the freedom to get laid a lot with men who it turned out appreciated her that she didn't know existed. And ultimately, she got through that phase in her life and moved on, and then ended up having a kind of regular relationship. But it was a big phase. She went through that phase for a number of years where, the way I explain it, you know, the internet was her teacher. And if it wasn't for the internet, and if it wasn't for sex on the internet, she never would have learned about how great sex can be and about how many people were attracted to her.
So is that sort of like the ultimate goal of the book, is to just embolden people to be more honest about their attractions and about their sexuality? Is that what it's about?
The ultimate goal of the book is... That's a really good question. I mean, certainly emboldening people is one goal. And I do want people to come away feeling empowered. I came away feeling empowered. You know, I grew tremendously writing this book because it wasn't necessarily comfortable for me. I'm not a sexologist, and I had never written about sex before. So, and then I talk about myself in the book too, and I've certainly never written about myself publicly that way. So empowerment is definitely part of it. I think there are other two really essential parts, and maybe three. The other is a connection, a human connection, and that for people to see that we really are fundamentally all the same, and that we all suffer and we all experience joy, and that we all are part of this, we're all sort of on this road together. The other thing is I really try to dispel some misconceptions about fat. I haven't talked about it, but there's a fair amount of research in the book about dieting, about weight loss surgery. You know, there's a serious aspect to the book as well. I mean, serious in the sense that there's information. And I really try to give, you know, at least a touch of education about what it's like to be a fat person and to try to be a thin person. And the misconceptions people have and the struggles that people go through. And there are stories of people who have had weight loss surgery. There are a number of those stories. There are stories of people who have gotten terribly sick on diets and people who still believe in it.
So I think this is like the perfect time for this book. We've got this great confluence of factors going on in society right now for discussions about body acceptance and specifically fat acceptance and getting more diversity in images. And I've been having a conversation today online with people because Victoria's Secret just announced that they're going to have a Love Your Body campaign. And Lacey Green, who's a sex educator, was the first one to be like, ha, 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 fuck you, Victoria's Secret. Because it's so super ironic that they would be the ones that would try to, you know, say that. And it's clearly a marketing ploy. They, you know, they've made billions of dollars off of having the most narrow idea of beauty that is possibly conceivable. And then, you know, suggesting that's the only type of beauty and making people feel like crap for not fitting in there in many ways. And their store is very much catering to specific sizes of body. They don't really carry like a wide variety. And then now they get to co-opt the language of, you know, the body acceptance movement that has fought so hard against their huge budget. And now they're going to get to act like, you know, they get to play both sides of the coin, and it's infuriating. So I think you are here at the exact right time. This is very much resonating with people. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the other thing about Victoria's Secret, and this is the first time I've heard about that campaign, but of course it's going to be complete bullshit because you know, perhaps they'll now have models who are a size 8 instead of a size 0, or, you know, and they'll make their stuff go up to a size 12 and call it plus size. But the fact of the matter is, in fashion and entertainment, plus size models are smaller than average size women in America. So all of this love your body language, like the Dove campaign, which was groundbreaking at the time because at least they had the courage to expand a little bit. But still, we're not talking about large people here. We're talking about average-sized people. You know, at least, you know, it's... there has yet to be any kind of mainstream, big product campaign where truly people of size, truly anybody over a size 12 is shown as being beautiful. And, you know, I saw those, the Dove campaigns, and I mean, all of those women were very beautiful, but they were also perfectly in proportion. They had classically beautiful shapes, and most of us just don't look like that. And it doesn't matter whether you're thin or fat, most of us don't look like that. Most human beings don't look like models. And, you know, so it's kind of a slap in the face to size acceptance, because they've stolen the language and they've stolen what people have worked incredibly hard to make, you know, moderately successful, and now they're distorting it and, you know, turning it into this sham, really, of, oh yeah, you're okay, you're beautiful even if you're not a size 2, but I don't know about a size 22. And that, you know, maybe it's going to take time, but in the meantime, it sucks.
Well, on a but on a happier note, though, the book now is coming out, and you're getting a ton of coverage. Like you said, you're going to be on some pretty major networks in the coming weeks, which you know is so much better than you initially expected. So I have very high expectations for this, and I do again think that you're bringing an important message at an important time. So people who want the book, how do they go access it right now?
Well, there are several ways. And first, let me say about, I'm going to be on the Today Show on the 16th, Monday the 16th of the 10 a.m. hour. And you know what that says? It says that people who are a size 22, a size 32, they count. Because even if Victoria's Secret's not going to have someone who's a size 22, there are enough people in this country who want to feel good about themselves, that they're letting me put this book on the Today Show. Okay. And I think that's really profound. And I'm very, very lucky, but it's profound, and it is the right time. So I'm also going to be on Dr. Drew, although I don't know the date that it's going to air. But right now, if you go to Amazon, you can buy the book. It's called Fat Sex, The Naked Truth. And just type it in, and there it is. And within a few hours, the ebook should be online. And that's pretty much the best way to get it right now, is Amazon. And I don't mean to promote Amazon, but I am promoting my book, so that's where you get it.
And then you also can find more of your work at peopleofsize.com. What all can people find there?
Peopleofsize.com is a project I started way before this book, and actually this book came out of peopleofsize.com, and it's a community for people of size, so, you know, primarily larger people, but I have an incredibly diverse group of people. It's definitely not all large size people. It's just people who care about feeling good about themselves in the world. And it's a community. We have discussions. We have information. We promote things. You know, it's just altogether a community, a social networking community as well, where people can feel good about themselves and have real important discussions about things. It's not subsidized by a makeup company or a diet company, God forbid a diet company. And so we have real hard conversations about hard issues like weight loss surgery and sexuality and all that kind of stuff. So, and then you can also go to, so that's peopleofsize.com. We also have a Facebook page, Facebook/peopleofsize.com. And then you can learn more about the book and read sections of it at fatsexthebook.com.
Fantastic.
So if you'd like to get a taste of what's in the book, I have had sections of it in the Huffington Post recently and some other places.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca. This has been a totally fun interview, and I want to thank you and wish you all sorts of success with the book.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on. Hi. I appreciate it.
And thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmere@gmail.com. And thank you.